sunset in Harare, and a drowsy evening was settling on Livingston Avenue. I sat on a wicker chair on the veranda of an art gallery that was once the colonial-style home of landscape painter Robert Paul. Guests trickled onto the lawn of the sculpture garden, among them the American and British ambassadors, and conversed casually beneath the palm trees. Drinks were served from a white marquee. Then a car pulled up outside. Out stepped men and women with batches of framed photographs under their arms. They were greeted by cheers and a ripple of applause. The forces of democracy and free speech had apparently prevailed. For 24 hours earlier, police had barged into the gallery, seized the photographs, and arrested O.K. Machiza, an activist who organised their exhibition. The police claim the 66 pictures were lewd because they showed nudity and that the subjects had not given their consent. No one doubted their real motive was that the exhibition, Reflections, contained devastating images of the political violence that racked Zimbabwe 2 years ago. They included a man lying on a hospital bed, a livid wound where his leg used to be, and Morgan Tsvangirai, leader of the Movement for Democratic Change, his face battered and swollen. Human rights activists went to the High Court and obtained an order for the pictures to be returned, so they were rehung in the gallery courtyard just minutes before Tsvangirai himself arrived to formally open the exhibition. The tone was serious, but there were also jokes, laughter, and music. Tsvangirai called for more such exhibitions and said that Machiza, who was nowhere to be seen, had no need to remain in hiding. He told the gathering, "He should come out. No one is going to threaten him." But as so often in Zimbabwe, he spoke too soon. Shortly after the Prime Minister's departure, the police returned, warning that they would be back to impound the photos before the night was out. So as the last guests melted away, the organisers could be seen frantically taking the pictures down and rushing them to a car so they could be driven to a secret location. The exhibition has been cancelled, though there are plans to revive it elsewhere. Later that week in Bulawayo, it happened again. This time an art gallery was presenting pictures of victims and families affected by the 1980s Matabeleland massacres, in which an estimated 20,000 people were killed by government troops. Armed police raided the gallery and arrested its organiser too. Zimbabwe is that kind of place right now. Just when your hopes are lifting, something comes along to dash them on the rocks. On the one hand, it's remarkable that, in a country often seen as a dictatorship, an exhibition documenting the crimes of the regime can be displayed for anyone to see and be upheld by the courts. On the other, the fact that the state can close it down at will, forcing the curators to make an undignified exit as if fleeing a bailiff, might quickly snuff out the flicker of hope. Tsvangirai admitted, "Sometimes, when you reflect back, you feel a sense of foreboding, because I think the polarisation in this country is reaching unacceptable levels." Such is the paradox of the nation as it nears 30 years of independence under one man, Robert Mugabe. The president is mocked at late-night poetry jams when most police have gone to bed, or in satirical plays as thinly disguised as Hamlet's mousetrap to catch a king. State press, television and radio praise Singh, the great leader, but critical newspapers such as the Zimbabwe Independent and the Zimbabwean can be bought from vendors on street corners. Long queues form each week to pick up the Prime Minister's newsletter, such as the appetite for an alternative voice. Civil society is vibrant and eloquent, despite brutal efforts at intimidation. This month, thousands of Movement for Democratic Change youth supporters marched through central Harare without incident. Mugabe seems to lack the will, or resources, to censor the internet, seemingly willing to rely on poverty and decaying infrastructure to do the job for him. He has more chance of restricting information in his strongholds in the countryside. Chinese jamming equipment has been used to block radio stations broadcast from abroad. A local journalist told me that a landlord was warned his pub would be burned down if he put up his village's first TV satellite dish. But as Iran has shown, in the age of the mobile phone, information is a tide that cannot be resisted forever. Then again, perhaps Mugabe is simply more clever than the totalitarian censors of information. In Zimbabwe, there is just enough free speech to create the illusion of democracy, when in fact the thought police are waiting at the door. Some things, it seems, cannot be said. Mugabe last week described the idea of enshrining gay rights in a new national constitution as madness. It was a move guaranteed to put Tsvangirai on the spot. The MDC has sworn to stay out of individuals' private lives, but it knows that publicly supporting gay rights could be electoral suicide in this socially conservative country. Tsvangirai reportedly said, "Why should a man seek to have a relationship with another man when women make up 52% of the population?" The MDC did not deny the quotation, but sought to portray it as an expression of personal opinion. It was welcomed, of course, by the state-run media. On the way to Harare Airport, I thought, a little sadly, about Keith Goddard, a campaigner I interviewed shortly before he died. He had expressed hope that the MDC would finally bring legal recognition of gay rights. I mentioned the party's dilemma on the issue to a Zimbabwean friend. He said, "There's no way I would vote MDC if they supported gay rights." "Why not?" I asked. "You cannot be doing that. I don't know about other cultures, but this is African culture. I give you 100% guarantee, 120% guarantee. Nobody in my clan is doing that." My friend is a kind and gentle man. I didn't want to argue, but I didn't want to let it go either. I kept cutting away with questions until I got to the roots of his beliefs. He said, "I take my knowledge and morals from the Bible. If something is not in the Bible, I don't believe it. I don't know about the dinosaurs."